And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, people who like scary horror stories. It's me, the Chris Keeper. Today is another very scary movie about people who were at physical fitness camp. Ended up getting cut up. It's a very good movie directed by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Sorry. That is my little dog, Schultzy. Quiet, Schultzy. Take that. Okay. So today is a good day for you to die, because it's that scary day, Friday the 13th. Boo! Yes, very, very scary. You're a bad Schultzy. Bad. It does what it's told, or it gets the horse again.
Hello, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I'm Chris Honeywell, and I'm here with the rest of the crew, Luke Giaconetti.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Chris Tyler.
Yo.
And Sean Engel.
How's it going, everyone?
Better known as El Jacone, the hair metal hero, and Joe Anthrax.
Yeah, metal.
And we've been doing a lot of Italian movies, but we decided to slip some America in there every now and
then. Yeah, slipping it to you.
So we're starting another little series now, and we got part one of Friday the 13th.
Yeah. The horror movie that doesn't play fair.
I have not watched it since it first came out. But
that was like 30 something years ago.
Well, I saw it on HBO. So it was a couple years. It was a year after it came out or whatever. And it was hardcore then.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it's I think Bart Simpson says it best in the first Treehouse of Horror after Lee reads The Raven. And she says, well, it was written in the 19th century. People were easier to scare back then. And Bart's response is, oh, well, kind of like the first Friday the 13th. Pretty tame by today's standards.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, you look at the movie now and there's some nice gore effects. Yeah. But compared to the modern stuff, it is pretty tame. But it does have kind of have the sort of same feel that we've seen in the Italian movies we've been covering. You know, essentially it's a lot like Twitch of the Death Nerve in the fact that it's just a bunch of people around getting killed by some random person.
That's how I decided to watch it, to make it more enjoyable for me, was as through the filter of Bay of Blood as a maybe like the bastard child of Bay of Blood in Italian slasher movies.
It's the bastard child of Halloween and Italian horror and 10 Little Indians and everything.
Bastard child of 1,000 rapists.
No, that's the
Stop
other...
talking about me.
That's the other franchise, yeah.
Yeah, it is. We'll get to that.
Well, actually, those franchises will cross at the end. Yes, that's true.
But no, the interesting thing about the original Friday the 13th is that, you know, when I'd grown up in the 80s, you saw Friday the 13th movies on USA all the damn time. But this one and Friday the 13th Part 2, you almost never saw. It was actually quite rare to see the first two. So I've seen all the Friday the 13th films numerous times, but this one may actually be, either this one or number two, I've seen the least of all of them.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and it's odd because with that same thing going on, a lot of the prior or a lot of the subsequent movies like 3 and 4 and all that sort of get set in your mind, and you don't really understand or you don't really remember what's going on in the first movie. So some of the things sort of cross over, and oftentimes it's hard to remember, you know, what's going on and what the plot is of the original film when you're so when you so have the mindset of the second and third and fourth, and, you know, running around your brain.
Yeah. And it's not like it's a convoluted plot.
No.
The killer shows up with 20 minutes to left to go, and we haven't seen her before.
That's the thing. This movie does not play fair. They do not right. give you one single hint about who the killer
well, that's
is.
That's the thing is spoiler, I knew who the killer was, and all through it, and I'm like, they haven't even given us a glimpse of this person so you could suspect her, you know? Like, and all the Italian movies, you see the crazy lady who ends up being the killer. That's another one of the links. Spoiler.
Yeah.
Although if we're spoiling Friday the 13th, whatever, you must be 10 years old or whatever. Well,
yeah, but you saw the 2009 version.
Right, right. Yeah. But you don't know until it's pretty much. I mean, it's not. It doesn't take long before you figure out this lady's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
First, you're like, oh, it's a nice old lady just pulled out of the woodwork as a jump scare sort of thing. But then you're like, oh, no, she did it.
Well, yeah, but in terms of like the not playing fair, every time there's a kill, it's like it's a man's hands.
Yes.
With like a flannel shirt on. It's just this movie is just not fair at all.
She's a little rough and tumble, you know. She's a tough country lady, sort of. What's her name from? The movie where she, the Stephen King novel where she
Misery.
Yeah, she's a little bit of Kathy Bates to her.
Maybe.
But it's looking at it through the Italian thing. The music wasn't very Italian. It wasn't lurid enough. It was more like Alfred Hitchcock, you know, like
Hitchcock, yeah.
Or something like that. But it did invent the type thing, which
Hiro, you said the movie doesn't play fair, and I've got a note here. There's the scene where the joking guy, and first off, let me just say, anytime you see a guy in a movie who's playing practical jokes, I write next to his name toast every time.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the first to go.
Don't be that guy, all right? But anyway, when he plays his little prank where he pretends to be drowning, all right? One of the girls on the beach makes a big show of grabbing the life preserver and running down the dock. And then by the time they get there to film that, the next scene, he's already been reeled in before she has a chance to use the life preserver, so she just drops it. And my note is that subtle or is that careless? You know? And I have to question this entire film. Is the fact that Pamela doesn't show up till the last 20 minutes subtle or careless?
Don't think they cared. It was, we're going to pick people off one by one, and then we're going to give you the killer. And it doesn't really matter because you've already come along for the ride.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we're going to see throughout, initially through these first couple of movies and then later on in the thing, that it's not really about the plot and it's not really about the story. It's just about, you know, what kind of neat ways we can find people to get offed in the film. And they do a really good job. Even from the opening kill, which is the stereotypical chasing a person to the forest and, you know, she trips and tries to hide behind a tree and gets her throat slashed. I mean, it's a good kill, but yeah, the story isn't really essential in this first movie.
And they set her up that she's going to be the main character, even though she, you know, but she comes off as kind of like insufferably cute, like coming up to the dog. Hey, do you know how I can get to Cape Crystal Lake, doggy? Doopy-doopy-doo. And then gets picked up by Pervo truck driver who firmly grabs onto her ass cheeks as he hoists her up into the car with her not even being just like.
It was 1980. Ass of grass, man.
Yeah, I forgot. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, you know, in the original version, the dog answered. No, that was.
Then that would have taken the movie up a few notches for me because talking dogs are always, you know, they're a big tipping point with whether a movie's good or bad for me. When I was a kid, when this came out, I was a snob. I was not interested in it. I was just like, it's trash. I was like, you know, I had read about more horror movies than I'd actually seen. But I was just like, and I also like slavishly trusted Siskel and Ebert, who were just like, ah, this is nothing but just dumb kill after kill. And I remember seeing in Famous Monsters some of the gore effects and being just like, holy shit, those are pretty.
I mean, that's, you know, and that is the one thing you cannot really take away from Friday the 13th. You can't deny the quality of the special effects. No. In this. And, you know, and that's something that's held up. And we've said this over and over going back to our coverage of John Carpenter, is that if you produce a solid, well-crafted physical effect that's in the frame, that will hold up. Because if it looks realistic to the eye in 1980, it'll look realistic to the eye in 2013. And so, Sean, you mentioned the girl getting her throat slashed. I mean, that throat slash, mm-hmm. I mean, it's still effective. It's still a very well-done quality effect, and it looks like she's getting her throat slashed. So from a technical standpoint, the film is still very strong, and I think holds up very nicely.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I was really impressed with in this rewatch, was that the film, for its time, looks very nice.
Yes.
And I've been watching Blu-ray, and I think they may have released a Blu-ray where they sort of upconverted it. But even the DVD, the picture quality is really clear. It's filmed well. Like you said, the special effects are really well done. It's just, it's kind of a throwaway story, which is basically just to get a bunch of cute kids to a summer camp lake to have them all offed one by one.
Yeah, the story is irrelevant until the last 10 minutes where you find out why.
Yeah, then
you also get the one kind of shoddy effect.
Yeah, what?
With the decapitation, but it makes up for it because there's fumbling hands trying to put the head back on.
Well, I thought they blew a major opportunity in that scene you were talking about, Luke, where the guy was in the water. I would have thought they would have had him be like, something grabbed me, you know, and everybody just been like, oh, whatever, you got tangled on a log or something. And left it at that as a nice little early foreshadowing of Jason, but they kind of blew that. I mean, and another thing about it is, it's not especially well written. It's well shot. It was just the first to be sort of like that, you know, and I think it just caught people, I don't know, by surprise, but you know, it just sort of became something beyond, you know, as the movies went on, they had to exaggerate. Because I noticed the actors were pretty terrible not terrible, but just not great.
Certainly you don't mean Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon should have been, you know, there was nothing to go like, this guy's going somewhere. You know, he was one of the duller characters of all of them. He was one of the worst actors of all of them.
Except possibly those incredibly tiny shorts he wears. Maybe an executive saw something in those that he liked.
Right. Oh, Jesus. Right. I was so disturbed to see Kevin Bacon in a Speedo. Oh, sweet Jesus. That made my eyes bleed. Well, so girls, if you want to watch Kevin Bacon in a Speedo, like there's girls listening to this.
Right. Yeah, you don't need to check out Kevin Bacon in a Speedo. They can just watch Wild Things and see Bacon's bacon.
That's right.
See the whole bacon bits right there. So,
but the thing about these characters, though, that I noticed is, as time went on with these movies, you know, and everybody, it became, you know, one of my best friends in high school, Tom, used to go to every Friday the 13th, and I used to think he was nuts because I just thought he had good taste. He seemed like an intelligent guy, and he's just like, it's just about going to have fun seeing how these idiots are going to get wasted. But in this movie, even the Joker, all of them are, they're really polite, good kids, you know,
for the most part.
They're sexually active and they're smoking some grass, but they're very helpful. They're working hard.
Yeah. They're not assholes.
No, they're not. They're like, they're very camp counselor-y kids.
Yeah. But you know, and part of it is that the formula, what we come to think of as the slasher formula, was not 100% set in stone yet.
Oh, yeah. It was when they started exaggerating these kids that they had, like, they said, okay, well, what did we have there? We had one girl who was a little sluttier. We had the one guy who was kind of goofier. And then it would get more exaggerated every time until everybody's assholes. But at right. at that point, the movies are all about everybody getting killed. So it's just as well that they're assholes, because at that point you're rooting for Jason to hunt him down.
Yeah, I mean that it really does become just a geek show at that yes. point. And the characters have to become more and more broad because your budgets are going down that much more, and you're really only trying to create a very rudimentary story and rudimentary broad characters that are basically just pieces that you're moving around until they get killed. Here again, the characters are not well developed. No. They're not interesting, but you could see some attempt was made, you know.
They're just nicer than the kids usually in these.
Yeah. Again, it's, you know, before we got to the point where it was so basic that the film was really just a parade of victims. Now, I mean, this was something a little bit more novel. I mean, one of my notes here is that this was the movie for teenagers on a date. You know, this was the R-rated movie that teenagers would go to, and the guy was hoping that the girl was going to be freaked out and grabbing onto his arm the whole time, and there's just enough sex in the movie to plant that in the back of your brain, you know? So, and it got away from that to become that it's like, fuck, there's no women coming to these things. Let's just make it for the guys and have Jason punch a dude's head off, you know? So
I think to compare it to the most recent Friday the 13th, the one that they did the remake, that was essentially all the movie's about. They realized that this film wasn't going to be for guys, you know, trying to bring their girlfriends to. This was the film for, you know, the general guy who probably didn't have a girlfriend and just wanted to watch some, you know, TNA and people getting their, you know, people getting sliced up. So, yeah, this is a bit more novel in the fact that, you know, it actually is trying to be frightening, and trying to set up the whole formula that would come after it.
Yeah, for anybody who's like in their 20s, Jason is just as much of a set monster as Frankenstein is, as far as they can. He's been around all their lives, so it's a whole different thing. I mean, Jason doesn't even really factor into this movie.
No, is it just as a cheap scare at the end?
A cheap scare at the end that may or may not be real. Right.
What want to know something that's funny? Is that, you know, that's the same ending as Carrie.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It's the Carrie ending.
Cunningham swears on a stack of Bibles that he had not seen Carrie when that ending was shot, and he had no idea that they did the same thing in Carrie. To this day, he denies having seen Carrie before making Friday the 13th. I don't know.
I can believe that, but I mean, you know, the thing about it is, if it wasn't true, I would think that maybe he wouldn't argue it for so long, because it sounds like something that maybe sticks in his craw. But either way, even if he didn't see it, somebody might have told him about it, or that was sort of an infamous part of Carrie, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this came out in 80, right? So, I mean, it was probably filming in 79. When was Carrie? 78?
That's true.
If he's, you know, in the middle of trying to sell scripts and get work, maybe he didn't see it. You never know. And it's not like it's the... I mean, even like the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari's basically got the pull the wool out from under you ending, too. So it's not like it's unprecedented.
Carrie was 1976, you know. And
okay.
And pretty, like I said, was pretty, you know, talked about and such. So I said, I don't have a horse in the race. I don't care if he didn't see Carrie or not. It's a good ending to Friday the 13th. And without that,
exploitation movies sequels are all about ripping off little pieces.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's what is your budget? If it's less than $10 million, it's a ripoff. If it's more than $10 million, it's an homage. You know, so. And
who
without
could
that,
rip off Brian De Palma anyway? How could you even, you know?
Oh, that's
De Palma
true.
Can't pull that on anybody, because his whole life is homage or rip off, depending on his budget.
Yeah, pretty much. But without that ending, you can't have the rest of the franchise. Also, you know, and that to me is even
not as we know it.
But
no.
did you think that they did that just in case they were going to? Was that their plan, or was that just sort of like, shit, we have to do a sequel to this? How can we, when mom was killed?
Well, also about this time, had Halloween 2 come out? Because if Halloween 2 had come out, maybe Friday the 13th was thinking that they could turn this into a franchise.
Right, keeping their options open at the end there. I wondered about that, because the thing about Jason in that is he's a rotted little kid.
Yeah.
He's actually pretty
horrifying. He's supposed to be dead.
Yeah, and he's also, you know, he's also a bit young for the amount of time that's supposed to pass. Because
that's the thing, because once he goes into two, he's a grown man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not only that, but, you know, in the original film, supposedly when he died in 58,
yeah,
you know, he was, you got to assume, like 12 or something. And this is supposed to be a set in the modern time, so
well,
I would say late 70s, 80s.
I was assuming that was the weird supernatural element, that he was the dead boy that lived in the...
The
lake
just stayed.
Well, they go on
and
they end up doing that. But as it first happens, I mean, if he's not dead, then she's got no reason to go around killing everybody.
Right, right. That's why.
That's the other thing that it doesn't play fair with. I mean, to have that, I think that was just let's have a jump scare and like every other horror movie and send people out with a shock.
Right, because in two. He's not the supernatural. He's not like the zombie type like he is from six on. He's the big dumb hick living in the forest. You know, he doesn't even have the hockey mask in two. Spoilers, but so yeah, I mean that and Sean's right. The timeline doesn't make sense if that ending is to be believed as anything other than a fever dream by the girl. You know, by Alice or Annie or whomever it is. I don't.
Yeah, it's Alice.
And like I said, I don't fault it because it's a cool ending. And as a horror fan, a lot of times you find yourself in that situation where it's like, that doesn't make any sense, but it's cool.
Yeah.
I like to let that go.
I'm wondering why she wasn't a suspect.
Usually suspects run away. They don't hide out in the middle of a lake waiting for the police.
Crystal Lake's police force, obviously not the most crack team either, so...
Like the police and Last House on the left.
Well, you know, all it made me think of was the line from The Devil's Rejects, where he goes, well, they do this to confuse the police. It's like, well, the Ruggsville police are rather easily confused, so...
Well, it was like what we were talking about in the last episode with Deep Red... The episode we did with Deep Red, where with the Italian police were basically the equivalent of this guy, you know, Barney Fife, who rides up in, this one.
What? There's a murder?
Andy, what have you done?
The guy who just comes up to try to remember he comes up early on to try and intimidate, and then speeds off on his motorcycle.
Yeah. Yep, and. Yeah, it's just one of the numerous false red herrings who, for some reason, don't end up dead. You know, normally you kill off red herrings. You don't just leave them alone and never mention them again.
And the camp owner, man, I forgot about that guy. He's like,
it's you.
He's like 70s Ned Flanders or something.
Those cop shorts. wearing the cutoff jorts at one point.
Yes.
Oh yes, there were far too many short shorts on guys in this film
that
for
was,
my taste.
Yeah, that's
80s, man.
80s.
Let it all hang out.
Or at least get hugged onto the side of your leg and bulged out. They didn't call them nut huggers for nothing.
You know, the other thing that's odd, one of the numerous films made in the wake of the success of Friday the 13th was the film Sleepaway Camp from 1983.
All right.
Yeah.
And Sleepaway Camp is a personal favorite of mine just because it is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a scene in Sleepaway Camp that goes on for approximately 6 months where they play this this interminable softball game. And my note here is, which is more interminable? The softball game from Sleepaway Camp or them playing Monopoly in this? Which is the more pulse pound?
It was strip
Monopoly. At least it was strip Monopoly in this, yes.
When they finally get around to that, it gets interesting. But before that, it's like, yes, all the thrill of playing Monopoly without any of it.
Yeah, but what is else has happened? They're intercutting that with the sex scene, though.
Yes, yeah. Nothing makes me think of sex like buying Park Place.
You want Illinois Ave. That's the one you want.
The thing that annoyed me about the Monopoly playing, aside from it actually being Monopoly playing on film, you had to actually watch it, was the fact that, and this is one of the things I think that the DVD and the crispness of it unfortunately brings to the movie. When they did that first roll, you could obviously see that the dice roll was a 3. There was a 2 and a 1.
And she goes, 6.
And she, double sixes. I get to roll again. I'm like, all I could think about was this outtake from Mystery Science Theater where they're playing Trivial Pursuit and they roll a thing and Joel says this number and he's like, no, that's not. No, we'll just fix it in post. And so he rolls it again and he's only rolling 1 die and he goes, oh, 9. So, it was just, no, that is wrong. It just irked me. And I guess it's you've got to play the film, but
no,
yeah.
It was just subtler than you think. That one, the one girl who started the Monopoly game, she was trying to maneuver into a 3-way. And the guy's girlfriend, she didn't know, but she was kind of receptive. And hey, a little grass thrown in there, and you never know.
That's always the impression I got from it.
Oh, and when it was over, he sort of that's like the most subtle acting in the whole thing. He looks at her and says something like, "Well, that was getting interesting," and she was just like, "Yeah," sort of like, "I was wondering where that was going myself," you know.
But again, I'd buy that, you know. I'd buy that in the setting, and I don't.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
I'd buy that for a dollar. But the. Again, there's little bits like that that work. But again, like Sean said, we're also at the same time watching Monopoly being played on.
Right.
I can imagine paying, you know, back in 1980, paying $4.50 or however much and going to the movies and watching people play Monopoly. And
hey, what do you call Jumanji?
Jumanji is more exciting than Monopoly.
I know. I'm just saying. The whole game's the whole.
That's debatable. I'm a big Monopoly fan.
I love Monopoly. Don't get me wrong. I own several versions of it. I'm just saying I'd rather be playing it than watching somebody else playing it instead of them being hacked to pieces.
Let's say mark our words right now to the listeners. Mark our words, within 1 year they will announce the Monopoly the movie.
Oh, they already did. There's supposed to be Ridley Scott directing it.
There's gonna be
really.
I'm dead serious. Oh,
no,
I'm deathly serious.
I thought they already did that. I thought it was called Boardwalk Empire.
I do not have HBO.
I don't have HBO either, but I like the joke.
Yeah,
that's
I've heard they're supposed to be making a Risk film, and I know that they already did Battleship.
Yeah,
Battleship was well that good. Did.
And Risk
Battleship wasn't bad.
Battleship was pretty good. Actually, the one that would be interesting. They want to make Candyland. Now I'm thinking Candyland, like directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Right.
Where the candy eats you.
Go to this fantasy world of everything's made of candy, and it's like a nightmare, a sugar-fueled nightmare come to life.
Terry Gilliam.
Alexi Proyas could do that.
Oh, yes.
Could you imagine being the guy who had to approach one of those directors with that and be like, we have a proposal for you. It's called Chutes and Ladders.
We can have Chutes and Ladders or Candyland.
No, but for Chutes and Ladders, you'd get some pretentious European director. I want to call it Snakes and Ladders, like the original version of the game.
Yeah, like Uwe Boll or whatever. Yeah.
Oh Jesus! Don't give him ideas.
can we say that we'll try never to have an Uwe Boll retrospective on this show?
Yeah, that's. Please.
Then again, it would be rather entertaining.
It could be entertaining. Maybe we can do it in one episode. I've only watched one of his movies all the way through, and that was for academic purposes.
I don't think I've ever gotten through any of them.
Which was Postal was better than it should have been, but it was still it was his only sort of quote unquote good movie, like where maybe it was almost like a real movie, but it was still really ugly and gross like him. So
then again, that guy actually gets to make movies while we just fart around and talk about them.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he's
yeah,
doing
yeah.
something right.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, I guess. he's got that showman personality, you know, he's got that Schlockmeister personality, and that's always good. It's somebody that you love to hate, so you know, there's people who are going to flock to that stuff just out of sheer, just general fuck you.
You know who I don't hate? Crazy Ralph.
Oh, yes.
Crazy Ralph is like the...
He's a
like
death curse!
He's almost a carrot. He's almost a, like, what was the older Carradine?
David Carradine.
John Carradine. He was almost like the cut rate David Carradine that they got for this.
By the end of David Carradine's career, he was the cut rate David Carradine.
That could be me someday on his bike, you know, just pedaling up there to tell everybody they're doomed. I love it. And they were doomed.
And that's a archetype that stays through both the first six movies.
Yep.
Is the doomsayer character.
That may be that may actually be the first, you know, real archetype that this movie put forth, because most of the other characters in the movie were kind of generic in their whole idea of archetypes. I mean, it was the kids going to the camp and everything, but there was no real jock, there was no real slut, there was no real perky girl. I mean, I guess you could get
real
Annie.
Fast in this series.
Yeah, so Crazy Willy was essentially the first archetype that we got in the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah,
and what's great is that, I mean, literally they bring him back for the next film. And his dialogue even references that. Because he says, I told the last group, they didn't listen. And again, he's one of our numerous red herrings that survives the film. Mm-hmm. Which is an oddball thing. Normally you find your red herrings piled up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, like Alice does at the end of the movie. She finds all the other bodies piled up.
Well, they give him, he's got this, God told him. He's a messenger of God. So, I mean, and at first it's like, oh, Crazy Ralph, but Crazy Ralph was right. So maybe God did tell Crazy Ralph. Maybe that's what drove Crazy Ralph crazy. So he's sort of protected in the.
Well, you know, he's old enough to have been around when that little boy died in the lake.
Yeah, yeah, but he's maybe only the people that get to die are counselor type or people who have something to do. Did anybody who didn't have anything to do with the camp get offed in this, really?
No, not in this one.
Yeah. Not in this one, but from this point on, but this one's like on it is just sort of its own movie, you know? This one has its own...
Yeah, it's a... Paramount hates this movie and this series. Oh god, they hated these movies because they kept making money.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, why would they hate the money? That's what Paramount's all
because
about.
Because of all the reasons that people said it's crap, it's sleaze, it's. But I mean, so, every year you were gonna get a Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, I mean, the people say the same thing about Saw too. Yet those are gonna come out every year because.
Yeah, but the difference here is that I said before that Friday the 13th had the sequels tend to have a fairly rudimentary story till some of the later ones.
Where Saw gets complicated.
Gets complicated and complicated quickly.
That's sort of the way we do things these days, though. So it's sort of following
don't streamline it. We make it more involved.
Mm-hmm.
And to me,
horror movies don't need that.
Exactly. You know, I'm a big proponent and a big fan of the Saw series, but really, you know, one of my wife's friends, she went and saw Saw 4 without having seen 1 through 3 and then complained she didn't understand what was going on. And I said to my wife, why the hell would you do that? And then I started thinking about it. It's like, well, you know, if you're not a horror fan, you wouldn't know that this was not just like Friday the 13th Part 4, which you can go without having seen them, that it's just going to be another, you know, film with sequelitis, and they're going to explain everything you need to know. So, you know, maybe it's a strength for the fan, but a weakness for the general public.
Right.
And the Friday the 13th series was great about that. I mean, you just go in, you've got a general gist in your head, what's going to happen from seeing the commercial and looking at the poster, and then you get that for 90 minutes.
And then you turn off your brain, and it's like, wait, wasn't Jason dead in the last movie? Yeah, but see, he just got struck by lightning, so he's alive again.
That's
Past
six.
Oh, okay.
That's the best one.
It's certainly up there. You can argue for some of the others, but most people will say 6. Because it also has, you know, Alice Cooper on the soundtrack, so.
And you get to see Horshack get killed, too.
Yeah. So.
The only other I've not seen, I don't believe I've ever seen Part 2. I saw Part 3 recently because I found a download of an anaglyph rip of it, so I decided
to do a
terrible anaglyph rip of it. But
it's not great non 3D either. It does have one of my favorite kills in it, though.
Well, it has one of the
random handstand guy.
Yeah. But
that
one, and I've seen Jason versus Freddy, and that's it.
Jason's a good one, but you know, I remember watching not this one, but part two once with a bunch of my friends back at school, and one of my friends turned to me and said, "You know, it's been 10 minutes without a murder or a set of boobs," and I said, "Yeah, this was 1981. That's the way it worked." And that's what we get here. It's like, don't go into this expecting a modern franchise slasher film, because you're not you're not gonna get
it. It's just more like just a real small pot boiler. It's not not really what you think of.
It's almost a whodunit, but there's really you don't get to even wonder whodunit really.
Yeah.
Because you're never given the who in like 20 minutes until the end of the movie.
You have no options to pick from.
You see two camp counselors get killed at the beginning, but you don't know what that relates to until the end.
And there's no way that you could put that together into anything, you know?
Yeah.
Except
it's a movie that essentially relies on the fact that the movies after it are going to allow you to understand why this movie has been filmed.
Yeah, because part two trades heavily on the death of Mrs. Voorhees.
Yeah. You know, it's. I think a lot of times anytime these long-running franchises, we tend to say, well, you know, the first one was good, and then a few of the sequels were good, but mostly it's, you know, the first one was the one that was really good, and this is the odd case where the first one's all right, but really not that good compared to some of the sequels.
Yeah.
Where the sequels really improved on this because it got away from this, like we said, this kind of low-rent whodunit and got into more what the franchise became famous for and what it made its money on. And so it's an interesting viewing experience watching Friday the 13th now because, you know, again, if you're a fan and you've seen it, you know what to expect, but it's like, well, this really is different in a lot of ways than the other ones in, you know, kind of broad ways and in subtle ways. And so it's an interesting viewing experience because it's different from all the others in the series, not just in esoteric ways, like it not being Jason doing the killing, just in its general approach and tone. So it's worth watching, but at the end of the day, I walked away from saying, yeah, this was about as mediocre as I remembered it being, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't hold a candle to Halloween.
Well, it was funny because I was watching and I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to enjoy this a lot more than when I was a kid because I'm going to go into it with more of a, like, enjoy the gore and the kills. And there weren't as many as I remembered, you know. The gore was nice. It's Tom Savini. When the girl gets the machete in the head.
Yeah.
Real callback to Bay of Blood. Whereas falling down along the wall, you see her eye sort of moving, you know, very much like the guy's eye was sort of moving in Bay of Blood, and it was very realistic. But you know, they're sort of few and far between, and they're not as there just wasn't. You know, there were some good kills. I mean, Kevin Bacon's good. But it wasn't the gore fest that I recalled
I think Mrs. Voorhees' body at the end is the seventh. There's only the seventh person that gets killed, and that's if you count the two people in the flashback at the beginning.
Yeah, that's nothing.
No, it's nothing.
But there will be more as we're probably going to be we're going to be covering the rest of these. I mean, we're going to cover up to Freddy versus Jason. I think is the final one so far.
Unless
we want to go into the Friday the remake, the Michael Bay produced remake.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will say this about that movie: it had some amazing titties in it.
Yeah.
And some good kills, but it was just like, this is like the greatest hits, but not great.
Yeah, so if you want the greatest hits, you can go to YouTube and get a greatest hits of Jason Voorhees murders.
I was gonna say, so should we keep a death count? So we're like,
yeah, why not?
Set it at seven. Sure, why not? Set the dial at seven now and see what happens. Maybe we could get a little at the end of this. We could get a little graph, that shows the ebb and flow of body count in Friday the 13th movies.
Be like Jesus, Ross Perot with our five.
Five is where it goes off the frame.
Five is wherever it is, where it just piles up, piles on.
Mm-hmm. One through four are pretty low key, and then you get the five, and it's like boom. But the only problem with that one is we might have to take all those away because it's not Jason again. Oh, did I spoil it?
No, it's just let's just go body count. It does have to be Jason's body count because that would take out.
I think we're at seven
for this one. Yeah, there would be zero if we're counting Jason's kills, or zero that we know of, zero on film.
Yeah, seven is not a lot.
No, and I can't wait till someday if we ever do the Nightmare on Elm Street. And
that's low. That's always going to be low.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more about the stalking in that one than it is the killing.
You know, in Elm Street, the kills are more elaborate, so they cost more money to make.
Yes.
You can only do a handful in every movie.
Yes, they were all special effect sequences once it got going. All right, so next month it's going to be Friday the 13th, part 2.
Duh.
Part de,
is it with de. Sackhead Jason.
I'll say.
Yeah. Sacko Jason.
Until then,
don't.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the music. The music's awesome.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Until then, you know, don't go into the woods, smoke pot, and have premarital sex.
Nah, that works.
Like anybody's gonna listen to that.
Yeah.
I don't know. The premarital sex thing is okay. That's just
an old rumor. No, that's not true.
There's plenty of
teenagers. I just stay out of the woods because I don't like to hike.
There's just plenty of teenagers out there who would be like, "Do I get to finish up getting laid before they kill me? Because I'd do it."
Jeez. Best day of my
I've read nothing.
Finally.
Excellent. Sail away, tiny sparrow. Spread your wings and fly to the sun.
You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Welcome to Amazon. I love you.
Visit our brand new website at TwoTrueFreaks.com.
Two True Freaks is always spelled TwoTrueFreaks. Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook, too. My name is spelled Scott Gardner.
You can friend me on Facebook, too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."